Thanks, guys. Hello, and welcome to Neo Bohemia. I'm your host, Charlie Layton. This episode is dedicated to the theme of competition, and I've made it personally relevant to me because I'm an accordionist in New York City, and I've invited two other accordionists in New York City to talk about what it's like competing as an artist, both in the business sense of getting gigs, and then maybe in the more artistic sense of comparing your aesthetics to another person. And although I consider them friends and colleagues, they are also a competition, though really, I'm hardly in the same league as them. They're both very talented, very skilled, and prolific artists. So we're going to have an accordion discussion. If you're an accordion lover, this is your dream. If you're an accordion hater, this is your nightmare. And who knows, by the end of this podcast, you might change your mind going one way or the other. So with me today are Erica Mancini. Thanks for coming on, Erica.
Hi, Charlie.
And Matt Dallow.
Anytime.
Thanks, both of you. So, it seems like the accordion is in the middle of a resurgent, a bit of a renaissance, and we'll see. Let's hope it lasts for as long as possible. But for decades, it had been, you know, since Lawrence Welk, this sort of cheesy, kooky, marginal instrument. But I guess with what you would call the new sincerity, you know, microbrewing, beards, mustaches, it goes along with the aesthetic of more grassroots, more less technological, more hands-on, more manual as an instrument. And it's a niche market in New York. There are jobs for accordionists, but it's a difficult instrument to play. It's not the ukulele. It's definitely, it takes time. It took me years to sound presentable. So I'm just curious, because it is such a unique instrument and there are gigs for it. And I just wanted to get your idea of, are there more opportunities? Are there less opportunities? Have you created your own opportunities throughout the time that you've been playing accordion in New York? It's kind of funny because you don't think of there being that many accordionists in New York, but then there's a gig like Accordionists Around the World at Bryant Park, which all three of us have performed with, and of which Erica and Matt will be performing June 29th at Bryant Park. From when to when? 5 to 7?
I believe
it's
so.
It's like 2 15-minute sets this year.
Yeah, but there's going to be accordionists performing through, I think, 5 to 7 or 6 to 8.
Something like that,
yeah.
So there's, I mean, there's going to be...
There's like 30 of them on that day.
You wouldn't think there are that many, but on these types of performances, everyone comes out of the woodwork, and you can see that it's an abundant instrument that's played in all different styles, in all different genres, and... What I like about this event is that Ariana Hellerman curates enough varied accordionists that if you walk around Bryant Park on these days, you don't find two of the same.
Right.
And I find that interesting. So, how did you guys get your start playing accordion in New York City, Erica?
Well, I moved here about 7 years ago to go to NYU,
mm-hmm.
and I know we're going to talk about other instruments later, but I'm originally a percussionist and also played some bass guitar. And when I moved to New York, I decided that I am not going to tell anybody that I play drums because then I'm going to have to carry them around and that's going to suck.
Right.
So at that same time when I just moved here, I had seen a friend who had an accordion and I bought it from him from Chicago and then I brought it here. And I started teaching myself songs and playing, and then just really low-key for the first year or so. And then I met up with Bill Schimmel, who I started studying with for most of my undergrad at NYU privately.
Cool.
And...
So you had a teacher after about a year or so?
Yeah.
And that made a big difference?
Yeah, definitely to have a mentor and to have somebody... provide guidance and answered questions and...
To motivate you.
Definitely.
Cool. And you also play drums.
Yes.
Can they know that now?
They can know that. I guess that's...
Now you have to carry
them. Oh, right, yeah. Now that's common knowledge. I'm for hire as well, so...
Great.
Spread the word.
So, Matt, how did you start playing the accordion?
Well, similarly to Erica's answer about not wanting to... carry her drums around. I always say that I got sick of having to retune and restring my guitar all the time, which is actually very true. And I also, played keyboards, and I was sick of having to bring amplifiers and all sorts of stuff. I figured the accordion is just one thing, and it's generally loud. So I guess I really only learn new things out of laziness for things I already know how to do.
But you also play the theremin, too.
I do play the theremin. I like quirky things, you know?
Great. So how long was the process of you learning to play the accordion?
So for me, I started out really, like, in my room, you know, just not wanting to perform, just learning little songs, like little folk songs and things like that. And then after I had about 15 songs under my belt, I went out in the East Village at nighttime, and I decided to just busk along where all the bars are. And so that was my first, I guess, my first performance out in the world. But then as I got a little, you know, as I started getting better and realizing, like, okay, this is, I should probably get better before I am out performing.
So what were some of the first 15 songs?
Like I was saying, folk songs. So, like, Irish folk songs.
Cool.
So just really simple, melodies, like, I don't know, the Clancy Brothers and the Pogues.
For me, the reason I started playing accordion was the movie Amelie. Just, I saw the movie and I heard that music and I thought, that's what I want to do. And it was, I had never had any impulse or desire for accordion aside from that movie. And that had been the defining inspiration for why I started playing accordion. And I'm almost done with the full soundtrack. There's one song that's super duper fast that I still have to coordinate left and right side.
Which one?
The La Noye. The one where it's the, she's walking the blind man through the street and it goes super fast. I can play it at a slower tempo, but I have to stop and start a lot.
I do a dumbed down version of that. I don't do those fast like arpeggios at the end. I do like the main melody.
So Matt, what did you first learn on the accordion?
I actually used to dabble in lots of instruments, and how I always learn instruments is I write a song on them. So I wrote, you know, they're all easy 1-4-5, but I wrote a major song and a minor song, and then I went from there.
Cool.
And I think the first actual songs that I learned, one of the first songs I learned was I arranged Painted Black, and then Hot Tamales and the Red Hat, Robert Johnson's song. I think those were the first two, yeah.
So at what point did you realize, okay, I'm ready for public viewing? I can go out into the world and play this with the possibility, maybe the expectation of someone paying me.
So as I was saying before, I sort of
got
went
the first
out 15 into this,
songs and
yeah, just like went out in the street and started doing that just to push myself out there. But then after that, it was sort of different. It was, I guess somebody asked me to play in a show. It was sort of like a variety show. So that kind of pushed me to do it.
Having a gig really motivates you because it's a deadline.
Yeah, exactly. And it was just as, well, it was also different because that was the first time I had to sing in public.
Wow.
So that was
singing and playing accordion.
It's rough.
Yeah.
Rubbing your belly, patting your head, tap dancing. Spinning plates.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that I didn't sing.
Okay.
So that was kind of more daunting than playing accordion at that point. And then after that, then I got a residency. I got my first, like, solo residency. So that really forced me to get, you know, 2 hours of material that I could hold down.
Yeah.
Playing alone. And then it sort of evolved.
Awesome.
After that, yeah.
Matt, when did you first realize that you could present this to the public?
Well, years ago, I had been playing on guitar and keyboard and theremin and other bands, and then I let people know that I was dabbling in accordion. A band asked me to, they were like a psychobilly band. They actually asked me to play accordion on one song, and I was so excited about it. I was terrible at it, you know, so that was, like, my first experience. But then my first real, like, going at it by myself and, like, was actually the day after I lost my last, like, day job. I was actually on the phone with, I was on the phone with someone, and then my boss clicked in, and it said, yeah, printing doesn't really exist anymore, so we're letting pretty much everyone go. And so out of survival, the next day, me and a bass player went down to the Metropolitan G and started playing.
So you reverted to busking as a sort of plan B or a last resort, or?
Yeah, kind of a...
So you lost your day job.
Then I started busking. But actually, a funny story from busking was eventually I started busking by myself, and I would do that every single day for years, and I was playing an accordion arrangement of Bad Romance by Lady Gaga, which was like the big hit on the radio at the time. And this woman runs over to me. She's like, "Hey, you have to work with us. Do you have a card?" So I gave her my card. She gets on the train, and then I get a call from this guy, and I recorded my Bad Romance version to a click. Then he put these dance beats into it, and then the next thing I know, I see him spinning it at Coachella with thousands of people dancing.
Wow.
And from there, that's like where I started getting gigs.
Wow.
And started making money.
Do you subsist entirely on music to live in New York?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, some of my gigs are acting gigs, but they're generally, I'm generally typecast as an accordion player, so.
Erica, do you live off your music?
Yes. Wow. And I think what's interesting about your comment earlier about accordionists around the world and how all of these accordionists come out of the woodwork, there are certainly a lot of accordionists in the city and in all sorts of places, but I think there's a large distinction between those who play and then those who earn their living completely off of playing the instrument.
Right.
And
did you notice yourself transitioning from one to the other?
Yeah, I wasn't a music major per se when I was at NYU, and then when I graduated, I was a little unsure of what I was going to do, and then I realized, oh, I can do this, so I'm going to do this.
Right.
And it's a hustle.
Yeah.
You know, it's just figuring out.
Matt, you come from busking.
Yeah.
And you pass out business cards and you get business that way. Erica, you started busking and then you got a residency.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, so I guess I haven't really done much busking, period, except for a few couple times, which were a long time ago. But yeah, I guess most of my gigs are from word of mouth or from, you know, I actually actively seek them as well, seek out gigs. And then a lot of it is happenstance. Like, I got one residency because I was carrying an instrument and someone stopped me on the street and they were like, "Oh, why are you carrying that thing? What are you doing?"
Wow.
So, yeah, it's all sorts of different ways.
And I'm actually, at this point now, it's word of mouth. My name is out there, and I hustle a lot.
You both hustle so impressively, and
I admire
that about you. That's why...
People always like, "Oh, you do such cool gigs. Do you have an agent or something?" And I say, "I'm a Jew from New York. Do I really need an agent?"
Right. Well, that's the other thing, is that both of these musicians have created their own careers. They've built it. I said before that the accordion is a niche instrument and that it's very specific. You can see it. You can have buskers on the subway, but then you can also have them in restaurants. And they both sort of carved out their own career. And I think that the two of you are distinct. You have distinct styles and looks, and your music is unique. And I think that's an inspiration for anyone trying to work as an artist in New York, that yes, you can make your own career and it can be unique to you and specific.
Yeah. Well, I think it's sometimes I wonder, oh, if I had stuck playing bass or drums and just been a really, really, really super badass bassist. You know, everyone needs a bassist all the time.
If you're a great bassist, for bass players.
You know, you're working every night. And I think with accordion, yeah, you get called out for very specific things, but at the same time, I think that you can also take sort of general music gigs.
Sure.
Or like, you know, perform just as a
add on to another band, or
right, yeah, as a side man, or if you have your own group, like, no one's not going to hire you because you play. Sometimes they do. So actually, that's not true.
But
I think it opens up specific opportunities because it's such a distinct instrument that you'll get calls for that specific thing.
Right. Well, when you compare bass opportunities, everyone needs a bass. Most bands need a bassist. And then your skill set, your ability to adapt to whatever band you're playing for would make it a little more specific. But not everyone needs an accordionist.
Right. So you have to make them need it.
Right.
Yeah,
and those who do have to pick from this more limited market than the market of how many people can play bass.
Right.
I'd say that they're more bassists than accordionists.
Yeah. Our mutual friend Seth, years ago, he said to me, like, you know, he's like, there's not that many accordion players, so I'm glad I found you, but because there's a million guitar players, and every one of them thinks they're the only one.
Right. So on the subject of competition, when you started playing accordion out in the city, when did you first notice other accordionists?
I guess I would notice accordion buskers, and you know, sometimes if I was playing in a band and occasionally there would be band, like, similar bands, you know, grouped together on a show. That's where I would see other accordion players.
I guess I was pretty aware, just in general, of the whole vibe. Because actually, now that I think about it, the first time I really was performing was with Bill Schimmel's seminars that he has every year.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 3-day series. They're called these master classes, and then at night they have performances as well. And it's really great. You guys should check it out, as well as other accordion-like-minded friends.
So because you had a teacher, he brought in other students, and that started a little community.
Yeah, so definitely.
That's a good way to meet other accordionists in New York.
Yeah, absolutely. But I guess I didn't... Yeah, I guess I was also always sort of hyper-aware of other accordionists, and to the point where if I saw somebody that I didn't know who was playing accordion, I would be really surprised.
Yeah, some people recently, since I've been back from the ship, told me about some new accordion players popping up in spots that I often busk in, and I'm like, who are these people? I gotta go find them.
Right.
Stare them down, see what they're doing.
Speaking of, you were just on a ship.
I was on a ship, yes.
So you were playing accordion on a cruise line.
On Carnival Cruise Line, yeah.
And that must have been a very competitive job. Did you have to go through an audition, or did you...
Well, they actually found me, oddly enough. There was someone who is a musician on the ship. She was working as a recruiter for them, and she said they were holding auditions in New York, and she searched accordion in New York, and I was the first few hits that came up. Sorry, guys. And... And then I went in for the audition, and I killed it. It was good. And then I think what even helped me out more was, like, 2 days after that, the casting director, who was still in New York, and I was busking, and I had a whole platform going nuts for me, and he got off the train and saw me, and it was like this weird sign, kind of.
Cool. What is it like when you notice some new accordionists in your spot?
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely had people sort of follow me. Like, I've noticed they, like, play at the same places mysteriously.
Okay.
Or, like, they'll, like, contact some people that I'm already working with.
Right. Try to poach your position, then.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Poaching.
Right.
That's huge.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Poaching is no bueno.
I have, yeah.
So if there is a limit to the opportunities of gigs available in New York, there is the possibility of trying to steal existing opportunities from those who have them. And what are the ethics behind it? Are there none?
Oh,
or?
Yeah, there's definitely... Well,
there's
for
definitely
me,
ethics.
There's definitely ethics, and I think that you can... To the point where for example, subs,
mm-hmm.
it's important to find good subs.
Yes. Yes.
Because then you know that they won't... that they won't poach your gigs.
Right. And both of you have subbed for me
yes.
in a theatrical show that
yeah.
involves. And yeah. thankfully, I still had a job the next week.
Yeah. But I think it's just respecting somebody else's space and their, you know, their gig. It's not your gig. It's their gig. And being just super respectful of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then knowing the people that aren't as well, because then you want to make sure that you're not going to have them sub for you, and then they're...
Right, so it's a trade-off. If you know that the person is...
But they have to be good enough, too.
Yeah.
But then you, you know, but then it's like, do you want them to be... that good?
They can't be too good.
They have to be good. They have to be as good as you, but they can't be so good that they think that they can take your business from you.
Yeah, or also that the, you know, the client, is, like, even if the sub isn't trying to steal the gig from you, the client may say, oh, I just want this guy instead.
Or they insist, of their own volition. Well, that's a trade-off. If you end up poaching one of your colleagues' gigs, they're not likely to give you any more sub work.
Yeah.
If they know that you did that once.
Right. So I think subbing is also really interesting because I find that depending on who I ask to sub for, sometimes you get work out of that too. Because then you make a new connection with another accordionist.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, oh, like they have nice gigs. Like, you know, it keeps them in mind for other things. And I've developed some really great relationships that way as well.
So I guess a benefit to respecting the agreed relationships of subbing without poaching is that they'll consider you next time, and then you are also now a part of a network.
And then you can, and then also then you can hire other people as well. If actually you can hire people that are better than you, that are really awesome, and then they'll keep you in mind for gigs as well. So it's, you know, sometimes it is okay to, like, go up the ladder because then...
Right.
Speaking of which, Sunday... I got a gig for either of you if you want to take it.
Oh, yeah?
Right. So, yes, if you work with people who are better than you, they will be very busy, and they will ask you to sub for them.
That's the lesson, exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. What is it like when you encounter someone who you perceive as better than you? And what is better? Has that happened for you, Matt?
Well... I have a very unique approach to the accordion.
Okay.
I taught myself, and I don't really play it conventionally. My joke is always, like, I'm not the best accordion player in the world. I'm just the only one that matters. That's a joke. But, you know, it's like, I can't play as good as most of the accordion players I know, but I can do my thing, and nobody else can really do my thing that I know of, at least.
Right, so aesthetically, you've made yourself unique.
Aesthetically and the style, stylistically, that I play.
Cool. Erica?
It makes me a little sad, because that means that I have to get better, and then I just have to go home and practice. And that's what it does.
Do you get competitive musically?
Music is so subjective, but, you know, you can take things, you can see what they're doing, and be like, oh, I really like them because they're doing that specific thing. And then you can try to, you know, learn from it. Not copy it, but maybe take it in your own way. It just makes me want to just go home and practice. It puts the proverbial fire under my ass. And that's what it does.
Makes you
want to... It just makes me want... And not necessarily to be better than them. It's to be better... Because I think really it's a competition with yourself.
Yeah.
Because it's all relative, too. We all come from different places. Who knows if, you know, the person that you're seeing has been playing since 5 and went to conservatory and, you know.
Sure. And full disclosure, I have encountered both of you as accordionists and thought that you were both better than me and had to wrestle with that feeling of jealousy, envy, and personal sense of incompetence or feeling... not as good as an accordionist. And thankfully, it worked out for the better in that you both motivated me to get better at what I do. I think it's best to take that sense of competition and make it healthy and use it to inspire you to do better.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and what you were saying before is that you made yourself unique.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't technical speed, or if it wasn't dexterity, or if it wasn't a certain tone... then it would be a style, a musical choice, or an aesthetic. I find that I actually look better as an accordionist than I sound. If that's such a thing. Because I'll clean up nice and comb my hair, and at a distance, people are like, oh, that's a handsome accordionist, and they get closer. Oh, okay. I get really good jobs as an accordionist at a distance. So just put me in the corner and don't listen.
Yeah, one thing that I've definitely encountered are, I call them furniture gigs,
mm-hmm.
where literally I'm like a piece of nice furniture.
Mm-hmm.
yeah, I had one specifically over, I guess like a couple, over the spring a couple of months ago, where, I mean, they, you know, it's essentially a modeling job.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, I have to say I definitely get work because of that as well, because when you think of an accordionist, you think of, a lot of people will say, my great uncle, you know, plays accordion, or my grandpa.
Short
like
guy with a hat and a mustache.
Yeah, like a larger, heftier, older man, but I'm a petite, younger lady.
Right.
But so
you use that to your advantage, because you're so unique. You
have, because that's not, there's... only a few other younger ladies, but...
So, if I see another accordionist, and I admire a quality in them, I can sort of pinpoint what element about it, and then start stealing it, maybe, or start incorporating it, if I really, really like it. Like, of our circle of accordionists, I think of Cornmo, for instance. The way that he sings when he plays is really, really impressive. And he just plays long notes. He's not fiddling so much. He's accompanying himself. So or the way that you can go really fast, Matt, or the way that you have really nice coordination, Erica. Do you notice that in other accordionists of like, wow, he's got a certain specific quality that interests me? Do you see that in other people?
Yeah, definitely. I was at Radagast the other day, and... I don't know if you guys know his name. He's this older cat who I guess used to play in like one of Bob Dylan's bands or something back in the 60s. But he's like a total studio guy, and he does a lot of blues.
Brian Mitchell. I met him in a bar one night very late when I was going from bar to bar busking in the East Village, actually. And he has played with my mentor, sorts. And we talked, like, blues. And, like, when we were talking at the bar before I started playing, and he told me he did blues accordion. And, like, I kind of, like, got the sense of how, you know, accomplished he is. And then I was just like, oh, man, I'm really nervous now.
So this is what happened. So I was playing at Radagast, and so the guitarist knew him. And so he was like, hey, like, Brian lives right across the street. He'll go grab his accordion. So Brian did, and he ended up jamming with us for, like, the whole, like, last set. And he was amazing. And we were just accompanying each other, and then we were trading solos.
And jamming.
And, like, and everybody loved it, too, because we sound so different.
Mm-hmm.
But his feel was just so simple and so good, and, like, that I really... And then, like, as I was trading with him, I was like, what can I do to just, like, play less and, like, just feel better?
Right.
So I think
more with fewer notes.
Yeah. So I guess that's like feel is something that's, you know,
been interesting.
Specifically from him, like I thought was really, really awesome.
Cool.
Hi, everybody. I hope you're enjoying this episode of Neo Bohemia. If you would like to support this podcast for free, then please leave a positive rating and review on iTunes. That's Neo Bohemia, NEO-BOHEMIA on iTunes. And if you contact me directly via Facebook or email, or you walk up to me and say, hey, Charlie, I left you a review, then I'll give you some free stickers. Thanks, and now back to our program.
Welcome back. We're talking to accordionists Matt Dallow and Erica Mancini about competition. If you could, what would you say is your competitive edge? What gives you an advantage of getting a gig? Is it just because you have a lot of initiative and you hustle and that you just put yourself out there?
Yeah, it's definitely, I definitely put myself out there. Like I said, my name is out there at this point, but like, you know, when I got back from the ship, I took a day of just doing administrative work, which is actually more of what I do now than playing accordion for my, but I just went and I cold emailed a whole bunch of people, and some of them heard of me, some of them, and I actually got a lot of work out of it already.
Wow.
So
it's got some hustle, and you really put yourself out there.
I'm good at composing cover notes.
Cool. And you have such a distinct look and dress that it's very unique.
Yeah, I mean, I think I look like the kind of the archetype of an accordion player,
right?
In a sense. So, yeah.
What would you describe as your competitive strengths, Erica?
I think, yeah, being very professional has definitely helped, and just being really, I guess I'm a very good people person. I'm good at networking, and I'm good at, I'm getting better, at least, at selling myself, too.
And you can read.
Oh, yeah, yeah, and just, like...
Have you gotten many jobs from reading music?
I've gotten different types of jobs. I guess, one of the cooler ones that I was able to do was playing at the New School for a Kurt Weill opera last year. And I guess the year before that, I also did another opera with them. So that was definitely one of the cooler things that I've been able to do. But it was a lot of work because, you know, it's not playing in a, you know, it's an actual really important performance. It's not like a restaurant where no one's listening to you.
So it's very focused.
So yeah, it was a lot of time and effort went into that, but it was really rewarding. And then, yeah, and I guess also adapting to the job, like I'm very good at doing that. For example, I just got this gig at a Ukrainian restaurant. So I went and transcribed a bunch of Ukrainian folk songs from YouTube.
Awesome.
Yeah, I guess just having a really broad repertoire as well. And being able to play a jazz gig or like a Latin gig or, you know, like a more rock thing. Just being able to be really wide with
that. Cool.
That's definitely something because I'm self-taught and I cannot read music. I mean, I can read it very, very minimally. Like if I get sheet music, I'll have to like write all the notes underneath the letters underneath the notes because I just can't sight read,
right.
Which is, and there's been gigs that I have been offered because they loved the way I played, but then when they found out I couldn't read, they said, I'm sorry, we can't, you know?
And you've learned to compensate by really trying to transpose by ear.
Yeah, I have a pretty good ear. I can play along with songs that I've never heard before and kind of follow. You know?
That's good. So what are some of your favorite gigs you've done in recent history?
I would say my top two gigs were, number one, they're tied. When I was the accordion player for the, in the Banksy piece.
Wow.
That was really big. I didn't even know that it was Banksy when I was, it was on Craigslist. It looked like an ad for, like, playing for the line in a haunted house. And then, I just kept on following up politely, and then eventually they said, okay, you have to sign this non-disclosure agreement. And, you know, it was just, like, the opportunities that I've gotten from that have been made, and his crew were amazing as well. And then the other here would be the Water Tower Speakeasy that I was the house musician for, the Night Heron. That's how I got into doing acting stuff, because... Law and Order tracked me down and hired my band to play in an episode that was based on that water tower. Mm.
That's very cool. Erica, what are some of your favorite gigs?
One of my favorites was playing in Greenwood Cemetery in a mausoleum.
Whoa.
Yeah, that was really great. And I did a whole set of death-related songs, and the acoustics inside the mausoleum were really good, too. So I really enjoyed that. And I guess our pirate ship gig.
Oh, that was
a
good
amazing.
One.
So Charlie and I.
Yes, Erica and I are in a band, Skullbuggery. And last summer we sailed on a clipper ship all around the Hudson and close to Brooklyn, along with Captain Mackerel Jackson, aka Ben Cerf. And that was a fun gig playing pirate shanties on a ship.
Yeah. I'm actually doing some more pirate shanties in a different band this year.
Oh, cool.
It's actually a free jazz pirate shanty, sea shanty band.
Cool.
And so I think that's in later July. We're going to New Bedford and Mystic where's Mystic? Connecticut? I believe in Connecticut. And Nantucket.
I think it's really great that... something that's unique about accordion is that it creates an ambiance. Immediately it evokes, like you said, people come to you afterwards and like, my great-grandfather played the accordion, my uncle. It usually evokes some nostalgic reaction because of its uniqueness. And for me, it immediately creates ambiance in a way that acoustic guitars in the quad of a college can't really measure up to. But, and nothing against guitars. I hate guitars, they're everywhere. I love guitars. It's just that I think accordions lend themselves to making a gig cooler already.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I have, you know, my philosophy with the accordion is that, yeah, it does have that ambience and nostalgia attached to it, but I'm also trying to break those connections and kind of bring it to a more modern audience by, you know, people say, oh, tango, can you play tango? I say, no, but I'll give you the number of like 150 other people that do, mm-hmm. you know?
And then
I do, you know, I do
modern pop
music,
songs.
Yeah, modern pop songs, dance music, and blues, and, you know.
Cool. So what are your favorite things to play?
I like tangos.
I like them.
That's why I'll go to Erica for the tangos.
I like them. It's just, I'm not good enough to play them. Maybe I could if I practice at it, but I just really never explored that area of playing. I'll listen to them once in a while.
I really do enjoy playing blues and country roots stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's very just soul-fulfilling. Also, I love playing Latin music and cumbias,
mm-hmm.
And different Latin grooves a lot. But yeah, I mean, it also depends, like, if I'm singing it or, you know, playing as a sideman is also really awesome, too.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to worry about fronting a band and telling, you know, directing
just
things.
Jump in.
So.
And you enjoy all, what do you play the most that you like? What do you like the most that you play?
Well, there's my band, Sunnyside Social Club, which is kind of like a mix of blues, jazz, Latin, and punk, I guess. And I very much enjoy playing in that band. We do a lot of really interesting takes on old things. I'm working on a solo project, and I have performed some of these songs live, like, you know, one or two songs in a variety show. And that's where I'm producing. I do it two different ways. One, I'm producing backing tracks, and it's like, you know, heavy dance music. And then I also have a robot that I built.
Whoa.
It's not here. I left him with his father, the engineer that I worked when I was on the ship. That's essentially also doing electronic music. It's a robot playing actual drums. So
awesome.
I've heard about this.
Yeah, I wish I had it here.
I wish you had it too. So I don't know if this is really going to happen, but we have this date. It's with this performance troupe that I've been working with called Opia. And we did a burlesque aerial cabaret like last month. And so we're going to redo it. But I might be doing, I might attempt to play accordion because I also do aerial.
Mm-hmm.
I might try to figure out if I can play accordion in the air.
Whoa.
And possibly upside down.
Oh. That was, I was doing trapeze for years.
Oh,
and
you
that
were?
Was, yeah, I was doing flying and single point.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, I
put
had
a couple mats down just in case.
Oh, yeah.
I had a whole plan. I had this small, like real small, but 120 bass accordion,
yeah.
And that was my plan.
Yeah, I have one.
But I kind of fell off, not fell off, literally, but just kind of stopped doing aerial stuff.
Yeah. I've been getting back into training more, and I think I'm going to do it.
Nice.
I just had to figure out a rig to put it around my legs so that when I go upside down, it doesn't hit me in the face.
Yeah.
I've had ideas engineered in my head on how
we'll
to make this work.
This.
We'll talk about it after.
Cool.
You've created a new genre now. I'm an aerial accordionist.
I bought that thing a couple years ago with the intention of doing unicycling.
Oh hell no!
But it's terrifying. I also wanted
balance.
To do stilt accordion, which I've seen before actually, but I'm just terrified. Like as an accordion being my primary source of income. If I fell and something happened to my hand and I lost dexterity, that'd be it.
Yeah.
Another thing I wanted to do was do fire breathing and, you know, like play melody line. And then when it gets to a dramatic part, just keep playing the left hand. And then with the right hand, bring the torch up to my mouth. And
so clearly, as artists, you're making your brand unique and creating a niche for yourself. If I need a fire breather or an aerial accordionist who does blues versus pop or tango, I'll go specifically to each source. This is great. I think it's time that we have to whip out our own accordions now and just have a little playtime.
All right.
So now we're getting into the shop talk portion of this podcast where we're just going to...
Well, we both have Detonos.
Yeah. I wonder if I should play that one.
So Matt is rocking a bright orange Detono that has rock and roll lead. It has a neon setting where it's flashing light.
Wait, hold on.
This is my shtick, by the way.
Yeah. Wait.
Gotta stay competitive.
Wait, are you ready?
Are you kidding me?
I don't use it, though. It sucks.
Oh, you've got a light, too.
I don't like it.
Okay, so for those of you listening, both Erica and Matt just showed me that they have lighting inside and outside of their accordions. And they just totally blew me out of the water. I don't have any lighting capabilities for night gigs. I gotta get on their level.
Hold on.
Have you ever seen Nicole Renaud's accordion?
Oh yeah, that's so cool.
There was
the see-through glass one.
Yeah, those were created custom for her. There's three in existence. One's in a museum. One's with the original artist that made it, and then she has the other one. And it costs like $20,000 or something.
Oh,
I had an agent for a year, and he was actually looking into getting.
I know the guy.
You know the guy that made it?
Yeah, his wife. He owns Duane Park.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's such a cool look. Okay, so everyone's got their accordions out. And we were talking about competition. This might even devolve into an accordion measuring contest.
I got a bigger one.
Oh, that's big.
I have the smallest.
What are some of the... So, Matt, what are the things you most like to play physically? Like, what do you enjoy? Arpeggios? Single lines? What are your favorite chord progressions?
My favorite chord progression is probably like is like the sharp five, like the one sharp 5-5 thing. Mm-hmm. Like real like. I do a lot of, you know, I like doing the I do a lot of like just blues licks and glissandos. Mm-hmm. I do cheap tricks, you know. Like,
yeah. Erica, what do you like to play the most?
I guess just to spite Matt, I can play a tango.
Right, because
the better you get, the worse you think you are.
Right, or that you and you.
Or you like fucked up a note, and then you're like.
You're jealous of the moment. You're jealous of the time you nailed it.
Yeah.
Or when you were practicing more.
Yeah, actually, that is so true. When like 2 years ago, a year ago, I was practicing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you can feel that you're better. Well, not better, but like playing more.
Practicing more and more studious.
Yeah.
Years ago, I was doing a theater gig. I was playing accordion, and it was a Richard II on trapeze. Actually, it was beautifully done. It was not comedic. It was dance theater trapeze to kind of enhance the original Shakespearean dialogue. Yeah. Anyway, the assistant director, right before opening show, took us all in a huddle, and he said, "All right, guys, just remember that what you're doing out there is inherently interesting. So even if you fuck up, just have fun." None of them are doing anything that's interesting. So I try to, and I try to keep that in mind. Like, even if I'm upset about something that I did that I wasn't happy with, I'm like, well, the audience definitely hasn't seen anything like this, you know?
Yeah.
True.
That's a good thing.
So just out of curiosity, can you remember one of the times that you totally bombed when you were playing?
Mm.
Has that ever happened? Because it happens for me more often than I'd care to admit.
I have definitely, there's been times where I've flubbed notes, and depending on the situation, sometimes I'll try to make it seem intentional. Maybe I'll repeat it, kind of but a little more polished the next time, you know. There was one time I was playing, accompanying an aerialist, and I was playing a tango, and I just, like, my brain wasn't communicating to my hands. Like, it was awful and embarrassing. And it was just me. There wasn't, like, a band around me to make up for it, you know?
Yeah, it's tough.
So,
I've, for whatever reason, intimate audience, like, two or three people, is more nerve-wracking than a crowd, a bunch of people, just because I'm connecting with the two or three people. So auditions... And if someone were to walk up to me while I'm busking, makes me more nervous than if I just saw a sea of faces. And all of a sudden, my hand starts to get a little shakier, and I miss the notes.
Yeah, I had just had an audition doing an accordion thing for some commercial, and I sent in a video audition, and I was chatty, I was charming, funny, and the song that they had me play, I totally rocked. Then in the audition, when it was like, the, you know, the client and the advertiser and like four people staring down at me, I completely messed everything up. I clammed up. I could not talk. It was
terrible. It's weird how that works.
Oh, I know. The worst one that I, so for the opera, it was actually for both of them. For the dress rehearsal the night before, it was an onstage role. And I fucked it up and they had to stop the entire dress rehearsal. And this is the guy who rehearses the New York Philharmonic.
Oh, no.
And I was on stage, and he was like, nope. He called me out. He had to stop the whole entire dress rehearsal.
Oh, no.
So that was really... But then the performances themselves were great, so that was fine.
That's how it goes, usually. You have to bomb during dress so that opening is perfect.
Yeah, so thank God.
Yeah. And it's funny because usually if you know that you messed up, a lot of the time the audience doesn't. Because if you just keep going, you can hide it, or they didn't know from better, so they just said, okay, that's how this performance is meant to go.
Yeah.
You know what happens to me so often? One of these valves will stick, and there's absolutely no time to fix it.
Oh, yeah.
Keep a thing of spray WD-40 in your bag.
Yeah. I learned that the hard way after just having to crack it open and then jiggle the valve, the buttons.
Yeah,
with WD-40.
I was doing a gig, the whole audience there and everything, and first one, like a valve got off and I had a squealing note.
Oh no.
Then, but it was very light, you know, and I was playing on the full setting, so it was kind of covered, you know, and then another one started, you know, a little bit late, a few songs later, and then my bass strap just broke in half.
No.
And I was just like, all right, guys, I'm going home. I'm sorry.
Right, you didn't bring a spare accordion.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, you can't just replace the bass strap.
No.
The, you know.
That sucks.
Yeah. So, in the process of being a professional accordionist, you've gotten very intimately involved with your accordion and making minor to major repairs.
I've actually taken apart entire accordions.
Yeah.
On the whole bass mechanisms, I've taken all of the 120 keys out.
Yikes.
And then put it back, but I won't do it again.
It's... Yeah, I was teaching myself accordion repair many years ago, like maybe like 6-7 years ago, and I had somewhere in one of these boxes I have a whole toolbox of just accordion repair tools, and I was getting okay at it, and then like as soon as I had some confidence, I put an ad out on Craigslist, I'll fix up your accordion, and then somebody came and gave me money, and you know. Accordions, they're all
different.
Every single one, there's different mechanism. I don't know how that happens, but And then I was just like, and this girl was like sitting there waiting. I'm like, I'm sorry, this never happens with other girls. I don't know what to do with this. Is so, you know, like, right. And then I just kind
of time to call Evan.
Now, if it's a minor thing, I'll do it myself now. But generally, I'll just go to Evan. And I like hanging out with Evan anyway, so.
Yeah. I just went up to Alex's. Because they moved.
I thought he closed.
They did close, but then they reopened to, like, not too far away, so.
Let's give a shout out to the accordion repairman we know, Evan Perry Giblin of
Brooklyn Bellows,
and yeah. Alex Accordions, who was in Times Square.
Yeah, well, he's pretty close. I think he's on 54th Street now.
Cool.
54th and, like, 6th Ave or something.
Alex is brilliant. Years ago, when I was doing the accordion repair, I was fixing someone's and I needed some parts, and I called him up, and he gave me a whole bunch of like little parts for free. Actually,
That's cool.
Well, thank you both for coming on the podcast. Thank you, Matt Dallow.
Anytime, you're welcome.
Thank you, Erica Mancini.
Thank you, Charlie.
And this was Charlie Layton. How do we reach both of you? Do you have websites?
I do. It is ericamancini.wordpress.com.
ericamancini.wordpress.com. And how do we reach Matt Dallow?
I actually have two websites that I haven't put anything on. I just have the right. I gotta learn WordPress. You can reach me through my email, mattdallow@gmail.com, or facebook.com/mattdallowmusic.
Great. So I will put those links in the description of this podcast if anyone needs to reach you. And I'm Charlie Layton, and this was Neo Bohemia. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We're going to close with a little bit of blues and A.
Yeah.